This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy Special Edition podcast on Iron Man 3. Welcome to the Special Edition iFanboy podcast on Iron Man 3. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And iFanboy columnist Ryan Haupt.
Also hello.
Hello, everyone. This
Hi.
Is the first big summer release in America. This is the
so
first,
excited. Summer movie season.
It's the first on Wave 2 of the post-Avengers Marvel Studios films.
This Phase 2.
Phase two, I believe it's called. And the third of the Iron Man films. So it's exciting. Iron Man is, of course, the film that started this whole crazy ride of Marvel Studios films. If that movie hadn't done well, we wouldn't be here talking about this movie. I wouldn't be dead. I'd be here, but we wouldn't probably be talking about a third Iron Man movie, that's for sure. Or an Avengers movie last year. Anyway.
So much has changed since then, you know?
Like, a lot has changed.
I remember hearing about Robert Downey Jr. like being cast as Iron Man and be like, yeah, that's... It's like perfect. Like, remember when there was like an option that someone else could be?
Yeah, I remember distinctly doing the story where I think we had to search around to find a picture of Robert Downey Jr. with facial hair for the story on iFanboy. But
I was living in Costa Rica when Iron Man 1 came out, and I just started getting emails from people being like, "Dude, when you get back to the States, you gotta check out this Iron Man movie because this Tony Stark guy, he's something."
Now, we're going to talk about the film. There's spoilers. We're definitely going to talk about spoilers for this movie because we can't not and discuss the film. So if you haven't seen the movie, do yourself a favor and do not listen to the show until after then because there's a couple of big reveals.
There's some big ones. There's some whoppers.
That'll ruin the experience for you if you know about it ahead of time. So don't pause the show and come back. But we're going to get into it. And I actually saw the movie in glorious 2D. Which was amazing.
Did I. Yeah.
I was lucky the theater I went to didn't stuff the 2D film into the back in the small screen. It was actually on one of the big prestige screens, so that was nice.
My screen was pretty small.
It was a game changer of mine. They had a self-butter station for the popcorn. That was totally new to me. I've never seen that. Like, they just give you the bag of popcorn, and then you go over to this really gross counter that has a butter dispenser or a butter-ish, you know, I don't know.
All right,
I'm just going to say that I don't think Americans can be trusted with that responsibility.
No, they can't, as...
I should have taken
a picture.
He actually just slid home.
I did.
He can't type because his fingers are too greasy. So let's talk about the film. Last time we saw Tony Stark, he was saving the world in the Avengers by going up into the space portal.
The wormhole.
I like space portal. What's wrong with space portal?
I'm just saying wormhole is the terminology that they use.
Well, if we're going to be using exact science, fine, because Ryan's here, then fine.
Einstein-Rosen bridge, how about that?
Wormhole, yeah, like that. By sending the nuclear missile that the United States government shot at Manhattan, sending it into space, blowing up the Chitauri, saving the world, dying briefly in the process. And so now, some time later, we find Tony Stark racked with PTSD.
Space guilt.
Which is that the science term for that?
Yeah, space guilt.
And which is a bad time to happen because America is under siege from the Mandarin, and that's basically where the movie starts. And there's a couple of, I want to talk about first stuff we liked, because I'm assuming there's more than we liked we didn't. There's a couple of things I didn't love so much.
Okay.
That we can get to in a bit, but let's talk about our overall impressions. I quite enjoyed it. I didn't love it as, and I think the first one is still the benchmark for Iron Man films because it has all the perfect sort of elements of what makes the character and the universe so much fun. The second one, and the less said, the better. But I really did quite enjoy this movie. I thought there was a lot of great things about it. And new writer director Shane Black taking over for Jon Favreau, who now gets a lot more screen time as a result. I thought it brought a great element of fun to the film. Thoughts?
Ryan?
I agree. I also enjoyed it. You know, we all just saw it last night, so I feel like I'm still processing it, and I feel like these discussions are usually pretty therapeutic in figuring out and codifying what it was that I really did like versus what I didn't like. There were definitely parts that fell a little flat, but by and large, you know, everyone in the movie seemed to turn in a pretty great performance. And, you know, it's got the spectacle that you expect from this kind of movie. And, I overall enjoyed it.
I'm glad I had the opportunity to sleep on this one before I got to write the review for iFanboy.com, which I mm-hmm. wrote up this morning. But it was still like kind of a really complicated reaction to this movie. But overall, yeah, I enjoyed it. I sort of had a Jarvis-style heads-up display over my eyes as I watched the movie, and it was plinking back and forth between 3 and 3.5 stars, even though I really don't like star ratings, but I had to think about it, and that was waiting on my mind, you know, the whole time. But I think it was very entertaining. I think it was much stronger than Iron Man 2, and I think in spite of a lot of baggage that it had, you know, thrust upon it, especially with, you know, this being the first solo outing after the Avengers, and that being such a massive success, and it having so many ramifications on the characters, or like you can't avoid what happened in the Avengers in doing an Iron Man,
which was one of my favorite things about this movie, was that it was dealing with the psychological fallout of a big battle like that, and the fact that Tony has PTSD. He doesn't want to admit it. People keep asking, but he doesn't. He does have it, and he's just a man, you know. He's not Thor, he's not the Hulk, he doesn't even have super soldier serum in him. He's just a man in a suit. And I think the whole point of this movie really is him becoming okay with that he is Iron Man with or without the suit. Basically, they lay it out in the final line, is that, and one of the complaints about the movie is that Tony's not in the armor a lot, and he's not, because the whole point of the movie is Tony figuring out how to be Tony and how to be Iron Man without the crutch of having the suit on him.
Yeah, that's sort of a forehead slapper for me, is seeing a lot of people saying, you know, there's not enough Iron Man in this. Like, it's all Iron Man. He is Iron Man. That's the thesis of the movie. And it's one of the strongest parts of the movie, I think. That central thing.
I just love the fact that, you know, you've got a guy, a regular guy. He's thrown into a battle with aliens, and he's, for a brief moment, it goes through a wormhole to another dimension, dies, and this has a ramification on you psychologically. And
well, it's also like we've seen him in the suit. We know what the suit does. We're familiar with the suit, and we haven't seen as much of him as Tony the Tinkerer, Tony the guy who can figure stuff out and handle situations without the suit, and that's relevant.
Yeah, and the subheading for my review on the site is the deconstruction of Tony Stark. This is about Tony the mechanic.
Yep.
And I think the strongest part of the movie is when he actually gets shunted off to Tennessee and lands in the snow, and
shunted off to a land of low tax rates on film filmmaking.
Yeah, and it's also
they filmed those in North Carolina. They didn't film in Tennessee.
Yeah, but that's why he went over to the southern region.
Oh, okay.
So it's all the same to us. That's basically what me and Connor are saying. It's all the same area. No, I'm kidding. We're awful.
Carpetbaggers.
It's also, but that's my favorite part of the movie, and I'm really glad it happened. And it's and it's the part of the movie that feels the most like a Shane Black movie. And I'm a big fan of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and of course Robert Downey Jr. comes out of that movie. So,
oh man, when the movie opened with a voiceover, I was like, wow, he's going for it.
Yeah, and I don't want to say that's the only part that feels like Shane Black. I mean, the whole thing is imbued with Shane Blackness, but
loves Christmas.
But I think it's when he gets to be him and do the Christmas stuff and all the shots of Christmas trees that he wedges in there. I mean, I love that there's a Christmas tree on, you know, the ship at the end. he just has to have this constant reminder to you that it's Christmas time. And even though there's a flashback, that's also during the holidays. It's New Year's. So we start with the Y2K thing. And I'm really glad that I watched Iron Man 1 before I went out to see this, because I was reminded when in that the cave scene and he talks about them meeting in Bern, Switzerland. And so when I saw the caption come, I was like, oh, he's going to be in there. And sure enough, he shows up.
That was a great callback.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And that was such a fateful night. Because
a lot of it, and a lot of the movie also is about how Tony's transgressions in the past come back to haunt him in the present. I mean, that whole party sets up basically his life in many ways. You know, his one night stand with the girl, his blowing off of Guy Pearce and meeting Yusuf, all that stuff ties into, you know, his future. And, you know, it's basically, it's an indictment of his past life, of the reckless drunk Tony who's bad decisions come back to haunt him later in life.
Mm-hmm. But that Tony is also really enjoyable to watch.
Oh, he's great.
I think the second movie was lacking that, because part of the great thing about the first Iron Man movie is that you get this taste of like, wow, this guy is an egomaniac, but he is entertaining as hell. And then they deconstruct him and put him back together as a hero. And so it's nice to get a little refresher of that. So you were reminded, oh, this guy really has come a long way already. Now let's see how much farther we have to take him.
Another thing that I like a lot, and this is again in contrast to 2, and I hate coming back to 2 constantly, but it's such a disaster, is that 2 was so overstuffed with plots and elements and characters and things going on. It was never very cohesive. It didn't feel very satisfying. Whereas this was very much a stripped down movie, and that it was very focused on this one thing that was happening. There was a good amount of characters, but it was all in service of this one sort of streamlined story that was going on, very much like the first film.
I don't think the weight is entirely perfect. I think it's still a little bit schizophrenic, and a lot of that is also going back to Iron Man 1, which is I've always loved that movie, and my affection for it hasn't waned over the years. But I've grown more impressed with it because of how lean it is. Mm-hmm. And one of the things you can do with that movie is like, it's maybe the best movie it's a great origin story, but then it's also the best focus on his armor, even though there's like better and more complicated, more complex suits of armor in all these other films, including the Avengers. That one is like the best showcase because mm-hmm. it's just, you know, the cave set of armor, the Mark One, and then the Mark Two building that. And it's almost like pornographic in how it like lavishes attention on the armor, where here it's like you're just getting thrown, like especially in the last act, like suits after suits after suits of armor that do different things, and it's all kind of overwhelming.
Yeah, they've never really, I feel like none of the movies since the first one have hit that moment where he goes to the Middle East and takes out all the terrorists and the tank and all that stuff. Like, that was just great, because you see all the functionality of the armor, and you see Tony getting used to being that powerful, and then he's got his fight with the F-22s, and
right.
Those moments where, you know, you can see that the suit has limits, but at the same time, it's a really, really powerful thing.
Yeah, and we're learning about what he's capable of doing, and, you know, going back, that cave scene really is so great, and it's, I mean, watching that movie yesterday before seeing Iron Man 3, I got misty again, you know, seeing that sacrifice, you know, seeing...
You know, I visited that set out in the desert of California.
Really?
Yeah, I was out looking for fossils, and no joke, I was out there with a bunch of paleontologists, and we came upon them building a cave entrance outside of an abandoned mine shaft, and I was like, oh, what are they building? I thought it was Indiana Jones 4, because that was getting ready to come out at the same time.
Oh, wow, okay.
But then my buddy just rolled down the window and was like, hey, what are you guys building? They're like, oh, Iron Man. I was like, really? They're just going to tell us? That's okay.
It's such a great set piece, and it going back to Iron Man 3, it's all about Tony building... Tony being a mechanic, and
he's lost his way. That's
yeah, and these are sort of our in the comics. These are some of our favorite Tony Stark stories. What was that? The Avengers story. Was it Avengers Prime? What was it called? Mm-hmm. Where they each go to different dimensions, and Tony has to, you know, he has to be MacGyver, sort of. You know,
which is what he has to do here, basically.
It was very MacGyver. The scenes in Tennessee, especially when he had on the vest.
Yeah.
And I loved that fish out of water aspect of Tony gets rocketed to Tennessee. His suit's dead. He's got to drag it to this little garage and work on it. And in the meantime, he's got to survive with nothing, and he's got, you know, he's being under siege from these extremists and infected people. And I thought that was a great sequence. I thought it was full of great sequences. I like the fact that Pepper Potts gets some moments in here where she gets to actually be a badass character and not just a girlfriend character, which often happens in these movies. And
yeah, you know, there's actually sharp highs and lows with that, because she's also a damsel in distress for a lot of the time too. But it's sort of, they make up for that by giving her some really heroic moments.
She's more of a sidekick. You know, that's basically the Robin role, is that, you know, you get badass, but also you get to be captured and Batman has to save you. In the beginning, she gets to wear the suit and save Tony when the Mandarin attacks his mansion and blows it up. And then at the end, when she's infected with extremis herself, and she gets to basically take the bad guy out.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Deus Ex Pepper.
Yeah, but she shows up and wins the day more than he does, and which I thought was a great twist on things, because he gets sort of relegated to the sidelines while she beats him up. And I thought that was a great moment for...
I like that they also showed how capable and competent Rhodey is relative to Stark. Because there are different moments where you're like, oh yeah, Stark is not faring as well as Rhodey in this moment. But they did also spend some time, even very little things, showing that Tony does train for this role as Iron Man. So like physically train, where they show him with like the little things where you hit the sticks. And then they also show him like doing pull-ups and stuff. So when later in the movie... it comes down to action-y brawl stuff, and he doesn't necessarily have the full complement of armor or whatever, it's not so crazy that he's still able to fight and perform at a high level.
But he's also not like Captain America.
Right. And I like that they gave us enough to show, like, okay, he's got some physical capabilities that are, you know, outside the suit, so it's not completely unrealistic. But yeah, it was good.
I do not want to arm wrestle Don Cheadle.
Yeah, his biceps are huge!
And like... do you see how he, like, coming out of armor or whatever, coming out of, you know, a zip line, he does those duck and rolls and then comes out with the, you know, the pistol at the ready? Like, he's, like, snaps right into action.
So who wears a polo under an Iron Man suit? That was ridiculous.
It was a little silly, but...
It was. I like the physicality of the armor, which is mostly new in this one, I think, in that... well, no, they introduced it in Avengers, where the armor sort of comes around the body and they could sort of jump in and out of it at will. So they could leave the armor, beat somebody up, jump back in the armor. I thought the physicality, the way they played it, almost like a dance between Rhodey and Iron Man, really worked out. The way in the final battle that Tony sort of jumps from suit to suit to suit to suit, depending on what he needs.
There's also that scene where Tony just has the glove and the boot, and that's all he's got. And that was a really cool scene.
I want to talk a little bit, because Ryan, you wanted to talk about sort of the expectations going into the movie and some of the things we knew and things we didn't know going in, and how that affected our enjoyment of the movie. And with one of those trailers, they give away that moment where you see all those armors coming up. Yeah. And I was really annoyed when I saw the trailer. I was like, man, that would have been a great surprise. Yeah. But then also I was kind of worried, because it was like, oh man, are they really going to like overdo it with the armors? And just the opposite. They have a lot of great sort of like, it's a total orgy of armors in the final act. But as we were talking about that Tennessee stuff, he's without the armor for a lot of the time. So I think there's a healthy combination of both. So for the people complaining about there not being enough Iron Man, I think you're missing the point, because Tony is Iron Man, but also I don't know what you're talking about, because there's a lot of armor in this movie too. So there's a good, I think there's something for
both
tastes.
He's just not wearing it. He's creating the armor to be not sentient, but act on its own.
Remote control, right? And then Jarvis activated. Right. Ryan,
Jarvis
is
really the hero of the story.
Yeah, and
he really does most of the work.
Yeah,
he's funny. I enjoyed the interactions with Jarvis as well.
So, Ryan, what were your expectations? Because I've been very diligent about not reading it stuff. At that point, I don't know anything about Star Trek. I don't know anything about Superman. I didn't know much beyond the trailers for Iron Man. I didn't really read anything. I didn't really know anything.
I didn't know much beyond the trailers either. But I still felt like. I felt like some of the bigger moments of the movie were in the trailer, and that was a little disappointing. You know, with all the armor, the fleet of armor flying in, and like, I guess by the time I saw like the oil rig set piece, I kind of was just like, oh, okay, so this is where the climax is going to happen, because we're getting towards the end of the movie. I haven't seen the fleet of armor yet. So it's kind of like some of the what should have been big gee whiz moments, I felt like were tempered by the fact that I kind of saw them coming, which is okay in a sense, but I agree with Paul that there were still some surprises in this movie, but I was kind of I didn't expect them to give so much of the final sequences away in the trailers.
Right. And then there were some there are some surprises and some really great twists in the movie that I kind of felt were telegraphed by the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that as a nyah-nyah, I'm smarter than you. I predicted this. I figured this out. I think there actually is a little bit too much evidence. And the big reveal here is that the Mandarin is a joke.
The Mandarin is set up as a scary Bin Laden-esque character who marshals forces in the Middle East and sends out scary videos to the United States by taking over all the airwaves and threatening and blowing up bombs and which are extremist people. Which we'll get to the extremist part in a bit. But the big reveal is that he's actually an actor.
Who's being paid with like drugs and sailboats and things
and girls and the real Mandarin is Guy Pearce's character, his name I keep forgetting, but because I didn't ever read Killian. That extremist storyline, so I don't Eldridge know these characters. Killian. But he's really the real Mandarin. He's the one covered in snake tattoos.
Which I love that they finally, like, at the end of the movie, he goes, "I'm the Mandarin." And I'm like, yeah, we kind of got that a while ago.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of
you
want to
know
too.
Who the real Mandarin is? Like, no, we've figured that out already.
Like, yeah,
we've
worked that out. We're past that point.
See, I didn't get that at all until the reveal. So when the reveal happened, I thought it was awesome.
Really?
Yeah, oh, and I most in the audience, I was all gasped and then laughed. When
you're talking about not Guy Pearce saying I am the Mandarin.
No,
you're talking
that,
about
no.
Ben Kingsley and
Ben Kingsley's reveal
coming out of the bathroom.
Tony storms the house and he comes out of the bathroom stumbling, and I didn't see that coming at all.
What happened with me is that when they reveal that Guy Pearce was in cahoots with the Mandarin and that the Mandarin was going to come in and film this stuff, the way it was shot, the way that Guy Pearce reacted to him and talked about him, I thought that that scene actually was revealing that reveal that Ben Kingsley was an actor and this was all Guy Pearce's doing. But they didn't, they showed their hand there, but...
Was it just because they were filming it? Because I don't see what they tipped in that scene.
I think it was
kind of Guy Pearce kind of talked about him like an actor, like a temperamental actor coming onto a set.
Yeah,
and then there's that sequence with the Mandarin walking in and getting ready to do the scene. And I see where Paul's coming from. It might not have been completely bald-faced, but it was definitely, I felt like it was showing that Guy Pearce was the guy pulling the strings behind the Mandarin. It didn't necessarily reveal how silly Ben Kingsley was going to be with it,
but it definitely
undermined the scariness of the Mandarin as a threat versus just a feint.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wasn't expecting Ben Kingsley's character of Trevor Slattery, I believe his name is.
That he was fantastic in this movie. I mean, he was really menacing as the Mandarin, although he did kind of a silly Walter Cronkite voice, but I thought that once the reveal happens, it makes sense. But then as the sort of drunk, high hack actor, he was great. I thought he's not in the movie very much, but I thought he was, every time he is, he's wonderful.
I thought he was very good, and I was a little bit nervous that when Tony mentions, oh, wait a minute, what was that you said about a sailboat or a speedboat or something? I was worried that they were going to take him with them. And I was like, no, this is that's going to be way too much. But luckily he wasn't in that scene. So, and we see him later, and I kind of liked his sort of coda scene where he's getting the perp walk and he sees all the adulation.
What he wants. I thought he was great. I loved everything about the man.
It was very good. And there's some people talking about like it being like a disservice to the character. I think, yes, the Mandarin is sort of the most storied villain for Iron Man, but I think it's a character that sort of, he's of his time. Matt Fraction did something interesting with the sort of like the
Kim Jong-il
thing. Yeah, that was kind of an interesting idea. But I mean, other than that, he's kind of really over the top. And in this Marvel Cinematic Universe, I don't think that character would totally work. And
yeah, my girlfriend kept bugging me because she was like, why is he called the Mandarin if he's Middle Eastern? I'm like, shh.
Right, and
they don't want to piss off China, that's why.
Yeah, and then speaking with that particular accent, which I liked that Tony alludes to the fact that he sounds like a Baptist preacher at some point. And so like there's all these things going on in this character. It was like, this guy doesn't make sense. And so that's also part of like the thing unraveling for me, and that I was able to predict it. But I do, even though I think they show their hand a little early, I think that it's a good, I really like the idea. I think it's a brilliant choice.
It was no different than the Swerve in Batman Begins. I mean, it was exactly the same.
Or even in the first Iron Man, when you find out Obadiah Stane's been controlling the terrorists.
Well, this is more Batman Begins than that. There was exactly somebody pretending to be somebody else.
Yeah, so. No, I agree with you on that. But the one thing that kind of bugged me about the Mandarin was that, you know, they had him with all of his the rings on his fingers, but and they had alluded to the idea of this the Ten Rings terrorist organization in the first Iron Man,
right?
And that never really was touched on here. Like, it was never made clear is the Ten Rings his organization, no, and has no. it right? But that. But that, to me, kind of makes the Ten Rings in the first one fall flat, because it feels like it's
a consequence of the of reality, is yeah. that they thought they were only going to get one Iron Man movie, so they alluded to the Mandarin in that movie, because he's Iron Man's villain. And then when it took off, they had to go a different direction. So that's just real world.
You know, it's a flaw, but it's not a deal breaker for me. But the other thing I like about this is, so then you've got the goofy villain in the Mandarin, or the non-villain. And you've got Guy Pearce being really menacing. And it's a better balance of doing two villains than what they did with Iron Man 2, where Hammer is like the big villain, but he never feels like a threat.
He's a goofball.
Because he's so goofy. Like, he doesn't feel like a viable opponent for Tony. And at that point, and Don Cheadle is War Machine too. So it just never felt like enough of... a conflict in Iron Man 2. And then you've got goofy looking Mickey Rourke. So with this, I think I really like the idea that there's sort of like Guy Pearce has kind of like this Palpatine Phantom Menace kind of thing where he emerges as the real villain and the viable threat. And he's kind of dry as a bad guy for a lot of the movie, but then by the end of it, he's a pretty entertaining bwahahaha kind of scary villain.
And that I liked him a lot. The only part of the film that really was tough for me, which I was thinking the way home was after seeing it, was that this could be a consequence of never having read the storyline, but I just didn't get a good handle on what exactly Extremis was, what it did. It seemed to do whatever you they needed it to do.
You shouldn't have to know it from the comics, though.
Right.
They didn't do a good enough job.
It seemed it regenerated your wounds. It also caused you to turn into some sort of furnace that could heat things up. It also made you breathe fire and some, like, it just seemed like I never knew what it was.
That's like high level Scientology though, for the fire breathing stuff. Like, you have to get up, like, you got to advance pretty far right. to do the fire breathing.
It just, I mean, it didn't really hurt my enjoyment of the film. It just, I never really got a sense of what they were facing, because I didn't really have a sense of Extremis very well. They seemed to start to explain it and they never really did. And then, so that was my only thing. I love the fact that it was AIM. I love that fact.
That was great.
I was hoping maybe somebody was going to be in a yellow jumpsuit, but they weren't. So that was fine. Yeah. But that was fine. You know, it just, that was the only downside for me. I really did quite enjoy this movie, probably a little bit more than you did. Was that the Extremis thing was unclear to me. But other than that, I thought.
Did either of you guys find it ironic that they put the original director in a coma for most of the movie?
I thought he had a great role in this, and then
he was great.
I liked that he was into Downton Abbey. I like this. I like he didn't know how to use like a tablet and
Stark tablet.
I liked his 90s haircut and goatee in the beginning. Flashback.
His self-importance, with the badge and everything. But then I also like that there's some dignity with him, that he's able to in the horrible accident, in the explosion, he's able to point out the thing that helps Tony figure out this puzzle.
Right, and that was one part of the movie that I thought didn't quite work for me, because we all had seen the clip of Tony talking to the Mandarin through the news team, where he says, like, this isn't about politics, it's just good old-fashioned revenge.
Yes.
And I was kind of perplexed by that, because I'm like, yeah, I understand that your buddy was hurt in this explosion, but the Mandarin wasn't actually, like, going after Happy, you know? It wasn't...
It doesn't matter.
I don't know.
If Paul gets blown up by a terrorist attack, I'm still going to be pissed at the terrorists, even though they didn't target Paul specifically.
I mean, is Paul not important enough to target?
Usually not by a terrorist organization. I don't know what Paul does in his spare time. He could be very important to the government. But what I'm saying is...
All right, that's really loaded.
If someone is killed in a terrorist explosion, you're still going to be mad at the terrorists, even though they didn't specifically target them.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, especially...
To me, it just came out of left field a little bit. Like, it just seemed kind of random. Like, otherwise,
Tony would want revenge for his friends.
No, but I mean, the fact that Tony was only mildly interested in the Mandarin up until, I don't know. I think that's
a
little flat for me.
I think that's escalation. I think that's a bunch of things mounting up, and him just picking the Mandarin as his opponent, because he can put a face to, like, all these feelings that he has to deal with from Manhattan and falling out of the sky and what he couldn't sop up with shawarma, all this stuff. He has to point his attention somewhere. And for a while, that was building a gazillion Iron Man armors. And now it's, I got to take out this guy who is threatening my country and messing up my friends, intentionally or not.
Well, so that was another thing that kind of was weird, though, because, like, so, yeah, he's been building all these suits over and over and over again and not sleeping. And then he's in Tennessee, and he's trying to repair the one suit that he has, and his house has been destroyed, so he can't access his other suits.
Right.
And then the kid says, well, why don't you just build something? And that's, like, his light bulb moment where he realizes that that's what he needs to do to feel okay again and not have, like, these anxiety attacks. But he'd been building stuff the entire time, so I couldn't quite
I think it's because of the way he was building. It was kind of like a throwback to being in the cave again. And then he had to find spare parts, and he just needed
the more hands-on, the
I
less.
I think it's part of the stripped-down aspect of the character. So he needed to get back to basics.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is that, as you said, like, Jarvis is sometimes the real hero of this. That, like, Jarvis does, watching Iron Man 1, Jarvis does a lot of the, like, fabrication for the Mark II suit or whatever. And, like, it's not a lot of, it's Tony making executive decisions, but not getting his hands dirty. And
I can see that.
Then he has to go into this sort of Home Alone Kevin McAllister thing where he builds, like, shock gloves and
awesome.
Exploding Christmas tree ornaments. And that was fantastic.
That was a great scene.
It's really good. And it's like, that's Iron Man. That he doesn't need, like, the crazy armor. And so how do you guys feel about this wrapping up? And it feels really like the end to a trilogy. I mean, like,
I was thinking about this too. We'll talk about the end credits in a second, right. But the Iron Man movies, more than the others, although you can probably say Hulk, but Hulk doesn't really get considered much, are actually complete works more than Thor or Captain America, because Thor was a complete work, but also felt like it was going to something, and Captain America really felt like it was just getting to Avengers, whereas the Iron Man movies specifically feel like they're just movies more than the others, possibly because they started it all. The first movie is complete.
Yeah, except for Iron Man 2, which is a bridge to Avengers.
Again, we don't even worry about that movie. But, you know, this movie feels like a complete work. And it's also because of real-world considerations, and you mentioned this in your review, I think, Paul, that they constantly have to write the movie as if they're never going to have Robert Downey Jr. again. So, you know, they have to kind of wrap up his story each time, just in case.
Yeah, and so, like, the screenwriters have to think about that, and then I, as an audience member, have to think about that too. Like, I feel like it's being thrust upon me that, like, is this going to be the last time? And it's just like,
I think it's for the benefit, though, because you don't get the feeling that you got at the end of Captain America, and that it was just part one of the Avengers.
Right.
You know, you get a movie that has three acts and ends, and, you know, if you never get Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark again, you got
right. But there's an extent to which it doesn't feel like this was the plan all along.
What do you mean?
Like, it's not it's hard because there aren't good examples of, like, a plans, like, a, you know, a conclusion that was meant to be, but
the plan all along was to make an Iron Man movie and hope it makes money. They planned out three stories, you know, for the
okay.
We're so used to in comics the story never ending, and it's easy to keep Tony from aging because you just draw him whatever age he needs to be, and you can always get a new artist,
right?
So I feel like maybe us as viewers might still be grappling a little bit with this idea of, like, these movie stories are going to need endings because these actors aren't going to do this forever. And I think there's still some growing pains in that process.
I think a lot, you know, when people are talking about the Mandarin thing and feeling maybe betrayed there, I don't want to say it. That's a very strong word, but I had a similar feeling with the surgery removing mm-hmm. the arc reactor, because he hadn't felt the need to do that before when he had the resources to do it. It's not like something suddenly happened. It was a weird personal choice. And again, after seeing Iron Man 1 so recently and seeing Pepper bring down the old, you know, arc reactor, and
I had that thought too.
Proof that Tony has a heart. That's all. And I'm thinking, oh, that's down in, you know, the Pacific Ocean now. It's been destroyed, and then he's getting rid of this and flinging that into the ocean. But
I guess it also could go along with the idea that before he saw himself as Iron Man, the guy, the suit, so he had that part in him, and now he sees himself. No, I'm actually Tony Stark, Iron Man. I don't need the suit to be Iron Man, so he doesn't need the part in him. I'm just trying to find a reasoning for it. That was another thing where I was like, why is he doing that now?
Yeah, it's, I mean, like, you can, I can find, you know, I can find a rationale for it. And certainly it makes sense, like, yeah, do it. I mean, get the thing out of your chest. It's got to be annoying and uncomfortable.
I mean, it didn't seem to be working very well anymore because he's constantly not having enough power in his suit and he's walking around with a car battery, which I thought was hilarious that, like, you got Tony in the suit with a car battery plugged into it. But I was also kind of like, isn't his arc reactor supposed to be doing a lot of that work? Isn't it, like, really powerful? But
yeah, so it's, you know, and then, like, going away with the trailer with the robot arm, I love the dummy robot. It's a great character. And I was horrified when I saw it, like, you know, falling out and, like, you know, in the water and stuff. And like, oh, no, I love that character, even though it's not sentient at all. It's not even Jarvis. It's just, it's a machine. And but
it's like his first little robot that he
built. It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what it feels like. And so there's, again, betrayed, offended. These are too strong. They're too strong of words. But there's a weird feeling. It felt icky. I don't know. It just didn't feel right.
Icky in what sense?
Icky in what sense? Icky, yeah. And I don't know. That could also just be fan entitlement. Like, I'd want my Iron Man. I want him to be Iron Man forever. So there's a selfish thing. But, you know, and I think Kevin Feige said something online today. I saw a headline that Tony Stark or Iron Man is a big – I forget what he said. That's probably important to remember which one is a big part of Avengers 2.
There's no way that he's not. I mean, they're gonna give him a giant sack of money to be in Avengers 2. It's gonna happen. He made $50 million from the first movie.
I don't need him flying around in armor because they're adding all these other elements, and we're gonna have the Guardians of the Galaxy. However that turns out, we're gonna have Ant-Man.
Not
in Avengers 2.
He wasn't even gonna be in Avengers. Remember, they had the whole setup where he was a consultant and War Machine was gonna be in Avengers. I mean, you can't worry about that too much. Just enjoy what's in front of you on the screen because he could get a car wreck next week and you know, die. You know, all kinds of things could happen.
What is with you on this podcast? You want Robert Downey Jr. to get in a car accident? You want me to get killed in a terrorist attack?
You get killed now in a terrorist attack. I'm just saying there's real-world considerations in these movies you have to take into account or not. Yeah. I'm not trying to let that enhance your or diminish your enjoyment as much as you can. It's not, you know, no one's perfect.
No, yeah, and everything you're saying makes sense. I'm just saying that was sort of the feeling.
Let's talk about the other thing that I didn't love so much, which is, I think speaks to the overall phase two, is the post-credit sequence.
Okay.
You didn't like the post-credit sequence?
Well, let me explain. I liked it as a scene. The post-credit sequence is you find out that the voiceover has been Tony telling his story to Bruce Banner the whole time, who's been asleep. And I thought it was a misstep because the post credit sequences have served to push the story along, even if the movie hasn't. You know, they've been used to bring us towards Avengers,
right?
Whereas this time we basically just got a joke sequence like the end of the Avengers movie, so there was no sense of momentum. You know, the one thing about these movies has always been great movie. Now let's get to the next one. Because there's this thing happening in the background. There's S.H.I.E.L.D.'s gathering the heroes, or Loki has they found the Cosmic Cube. There's always been something pushing the story forward to the Avengers movie.
Right.
And so here there was no element of that. There was no...
I think the thing there was a choice, and this is in reading interviews and stuff with the, you know, the producers and stuff and Kevin Feige, like saying, I think they're really concerned about, the big question was, can you do a solo story with these superheroes after the Avengers, like, because it's like such a hard act to follow. And with this, it's, I think they were really making an effort to touch on the Avengers, but then move in a, like, in a different, change the trajectory. And it's not just about going to the next Avengers movie. And Iron Man 3 is a weird case because it might be the end of the Iron Man.
But the thing is, I think
but with the other characters, I think they want to move, they want to move out from that. And yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think I understand the intention is that they don't want this to be constantly, let's get back to Avengers 2, you know, that meetup, because that's all that matters.
I understand that completely. And I also understand the idea that they just wrote the first draft, so they may not even know what they're leading towards. But
right.
But it's just that I think that's been a big draw for lots of people, not just me, but people in general, that these things are leading together somewhere.
I don't know
even,
what...
Even if you're trying to tell your own story, it's still in the background, there's this thing happening.
Well, maybe they're leading to Science Bros Adventures. You don't know.
It could
maybe
be, which would be awesome.
Avengers 3 is Avengers 3 the Science Bros.
But because that's what's great about the post-credit sequences. It doesn't really infringe upon the movie. It's just, oh, yeah, also there's this thing happening in the background of this movie that you should be aware of because it's pointing you towards all these other things.
Right. I'm just, yeah. You know what? I'm just glad. Selfishly, I'm just glad that we get, you know, the Bruce Banner scene, because after seeing the Avengers and seeing them drive off together and seeing that amazing chemistry, I was like, it's really too bad that they're probably so far along on Iron Man 3 that they don't realize what they have here and they're probably not going to include anything. I just really wanted, you know, Tony to pick up a phone and have a problem. Like, you know, in the scene where he's going over the wreckage, just to call Bruce on the phone.
Yeah.
And be like, I need some help on this one. And even if they're like, even if they shot Mark Ruffalo's scene, like, you know, in an airport or whatever, like they did with this, like his presence needs to be there. Cause he's such a great addition to the cinematic universe.
Yeah. No, I think the scene was great. I laughed. It was fun. They've got great chemistry. It's nice to, you know, have the Hulk show up. But, you know, it's I miss that aspect of going, oh, now I have something to look forward to, which is the whole point of these. They want you to see the next one. They want you to see.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, there is, but
they want you to see Thor 2. You know,
well,
there
is a precedent with, you know, Avengers with the shawarma thing. I mean, that's not a...
No, but Avengers had two post-credit sequences. They had shawarma and they had Thanos.
And Thanos points you forward. And then they just added...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Shawarma was filmed after the release because it was just a joke. Like, that's why the reason Chris Evans has his hand over his face the entire time is because he'd grown a beard for
right,
the movie
yeah,
he was doing next.
Movie,
so.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I missed that element of it. I missed the, you know, leaving the theater going, oh, I can't wait to see whatever, you know, Thor, whatever they're pointing to, you know, whatever they're pointing to. But I understand. I mean, I understand. There's lots of things to consider. And I just told you not to worry about it. Now here I am worrying about it, which,
yeah.
Which is, you know, how it works. But. So anyway, those are my two
complex man, Connor,
or very just exhausted. I saw, you know, I'm not so young anymore. I got out of theater after midnight.
I think it's extremely telling that we haven't mentioned Rebecca Hall at all because character was very boring.
She was.
I just found that stuff, and then like in addition to the Guy Pearce, I feel like I don't want to sound like I'm attacking Rebecca Hall. I didn't
really
enjoy
hung
her
up on her character.
It just feels like dead weight on the movie. Like it's just anytime we go back to Extremis, it's just.
Well, I think that's part of the Extremis not being fleshed out properly, but also it's just, you know, she represents his failure more than anything. She's not really that much that important otherwise, you know.
Yeah, and then her
he blew her off, and this is what happens.
And her death, I mean, it's another, you know, that's also systematic of how she figures into the story. It's like she's just an afterthought, or she's just a means to an end,
which I think is the point, right? She's
yeah,
both.
That's true. It's just I don't know.
She, you know, Tony uses her for sex, and guy's name I can't ever remember uses her for her technology.
Gillian,
and you know, she was a non-factor.
Yeah, and I wish she felt more tragic than non-factor. You know what I mean? Like I wish I cared more about that fact. I wish that I was more up in arms in the fact that she was used that way, but I don't care. I mean, and like her sort of heel turn was also kind of you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But I did really enjoy it. I had a lot of fun. I thought Shane Black brought a lot of good humor and irreverence to the not that it super needed it because Downey's great, but I thought his tone was good.
Man, him and the kid had some great
chemistry. Him and the kid were wonderful.
To the point where you're almost like, wow, Tony's being really mean, but this kid is totally firing right back.
Yeah, no, they had a great... I think Tony saw he could be mean to the kid. The kid would take it and give it back to him.
That was great.
Are you
leaving
like my dad?
Yes. Like I said in the review, like if that kid was like the like a different actor and it was just played wrong, like because that kid is like he's cute when he needs to be, but then he's also like he rolls with the punches. Yeah, it's just like I'm... Like, that kid could be totally obnoxious, played the wrong way. And this was just pitch perfect.
And so that was our thoughts on Iron Man 3. You can go to ifanboy.com and read Paul's full review on it. You can also go to ifanboy.com and discuss the film in a variety of places. Tell us what you thought about it, what your pluses and minuses were, whether you enjoyed it. Lots of people are already talking about how much they hated the Mandarin reveal. We loved it. Go talk. Tell us what you thought. And we'll be back for Star Trek in a few weeks. And then... heading towards the big big release that we're all looking forward to, Superman, Man of Steel. We'll also be talking about Thor later on, in the year. That's the next Marvel Studios film. They're looking to do two a year.
We're gonna have more stuff before Thor. I mean, we're gonna Lone Ranger. I think we're gonna talk about
Lone Ranger. I think Paul and I definitely. Lots of this is a big movie for fun stuff at the theater. So we're gonna do a lot of these special edition podcasts because they're fun to talk about.
Yeah.
And so we'll be back in a few weeks with Star Trek Into Darkness. Until then, I am Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan.
And I have no...
Sometimes you say the wrong cranberry.
I have no quips.
That's a great one.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.